Hello all, Samantha Attard here from Happy Healthy Human Radio. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today. I am super excited to talk about some pregnancy and nutrition stuff. Many of you probably know I got a PhD in nutrition and have spent probably all told 10, 15 years like exclusively thinking about nutrition like all the time. So people have been wondering what I've been doing when I'm pregnant. And this has been like a really interesting time, and it's been a really interesting thing to dig into and to really explore, because I've had times and periods of my life where I'm like, got to follow this exact plan, da, da, da. You know, and times where I'm like more like, no, eat intuitively. What does your body need? What is good? You know, and I found this like middle ground with Ayurveda, which is intuitive, but still has a sense of guidelines and a sense of a pattern or things that are good for you in general. And, you know, if you've been pregnant or you know anyone that's been pregnant, you know that everything gets kind of thrown a little bit to the wayside during pregnancy, just because of all of the crazy hormones and symptoms and things that can come up over the course of those 40 weeks. And so I really want to talk about some of the mindsets around pregnancy nutrition, as well as some of the really important foods to be sure that you're getting, as well as things where it's a little more like follow what you want, so that you're sure that you're getting the things you need for your baby to be healthy. And then from there, you can really follow what it is your body wants and needs. Also, we're going to talk a little bit about the gestational diabetes test, because that's what I did today and why something that really is on top of mind. So I'm excited to get into it. Before we totally do, new website is up. Super exciting. It's really beautiful. It's called Spiro Collective, S-P-I-R-O collective.com. I think you're going to love it. Go check it out. Still same old me, but just with a little bit of a facelift. That kind of doesn't feel like the right word, but the website's gotten a facelift. How about that? Not me with a facelift. The website has a facelift. There we go. Check it on out. I got lots of other little events and things happening before maternity leave happens in mid-October. Biggest one, hugest one, super cool one is yoga teacher training over at Spark Yoga. If you've been interested in becoming a yoga teacher, or if you've been thinking about deepening your practice, or really want to just like sit around with a bunch of people that like to talk about yoga, which is what I like to do with my free time, you should totally sign up. It's really amazing. So go to sparkyoga.com and you can look up the training there to get all the details. You can also always send me a note, send me an email, or message me over on Instagram if you're interested in the program and want to learn more. So it starts September 6th over in Arlington. I hope to see you there. I am so, so pumped. So let's talk pregnancy nutrition. Holy my goodness. You know, it's kind of like interesting, kind of like with anything with pregnancy, there's like a lot of misconceptions, isn't fully the right word. I guess I'll say a lot of assumptions and a lot of tropes, like cliches, right? Like the cliche of like, oh, you've just been barfing for the last 12 weeks, the cliche that you're eating for two and you should eat whatever you want, right? Like there's all of these little subtle clues and subtle hints that we get about how we're like quote unquote supposed to be feeling. So, you know, we're supposed to feel like crap for 12 weeks and not be able to hold anything down. And then we're going to start eating like a maniac. And then we're going to truly become a maniac because we're going to start wanting to eat, like have these crazy overwhelming cravings for pickles and this and that. And like, you know, and basically, you know, your body is not your own for 9 months, and you are just at the whim of whatever it is your baby wants. That's kind of how I see it in terms of what I feel and like the way people kind of talk to me about food as I'm pregnant. It's like this, ho, 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 what are you doing there, you know? And yeah, it's not that special. Like, it's not that crazy different. Of course, many people have different experiences. I mean, I know a lot of people that have had really, like a lot of morning sickness through their first trimester. Some of them, it's even gone further on into their second trimester. Other people that said, nah, I kind of eat normally. Sure, I would feel weird every once in a while, but yeah, whatever. I've yet to know someone that had an absurd craving. Like, I would love to eat peanut butter and pickles together. Like, that I haven't found. But having cravings, yes, that does definitely happen. And it's interesting, in Ayurveda, they say that the first four and a half months, so basically about halfway through your pregnancy, those cravings are related to you and your dosha. And then after that, it's actually related to the baby and the baby's dosha, which I think is super cool. That it's like, mom, like, get me some spicy stuff, right? Like, that's so cool. And if so, my baby is telling me don't touch any spicy things, in case you were wondering. So just like to start with the fact that, yeah, a lot of stuff changes during your pregnancy, but you also don't, you're not a completely different person, right? Like, a lot of the same rules still apply, like eat whole foods, eat vegetables, don't eat too much, eat regularly, right? Like, I think what happens for a lot of people is pregnancy forces them into enforcing the routines that they maybe didn't have before. Like, baby tells me if it's time to eat, you know what I mean? And so for some people, I think they, it kind of feels like this huge change, but it's some of the habits that potentially their body was already kind of craving, but just wasn't fully there yet. So just a little word on that. I think it's fascinating. We learned it in public health school and nutrition school that you're not supposed to eat any extra calories the first trimester, and that even the second trimester you only need 200 extra calories, and I think it's like 300 or 350 the third trimester. Maybe. I'm going to say that's not been my experience. My appetite was way bigger in the first trimester. Who knows why? There could be lots of reasons. But I think I've definitely been eating more than 200 calories more. But just throwing that out there, that's what the recommendations say. I don't know how much I believe it. And I think it also really also depends on your starting place and in terms of like what kind of fat stores you have in your body already, if you're eating a lot of mineral-rich foods or not. I think if people aren't eating super healthy foods that have a lot of micronutrients, so micronutrients are all of the things that don't have calories, like your vitamins and your minerals, like the baby needs a lot of those too. So it's not just that it needs all of your carbs. It's like, no, I need some zinc, like real bad. And so in many situations, our appetite is being driven by a need for micronutrients, not macronutrients. Sometimes we're hungry not because we need calories, but because we need some vitamins, which I think is absolutely fascinating. And, you know, I would totally give that as like a reason why maybe I was hungrier. Obviously, I eat a lot of minerals and things in my diet, but I do know that I'm someone that tends towards mineral deficiencies even when I'm eating a lot of them. So maybe that's why I was so hungry. Who knows? But I think that is a really important thing to remember and to have at play, which is why let's talk about some essential nutrients. Omega-3 fatty acids, so huge. Probably heard about them. EPA, DHA, they come in fish most often, though they are present in other foods. And it's amazing for brain development. And, you know, you're growing a new brain inside of you. So omega-3s are, like, so, so, so important. Interesting, and I kind of was thinking about it today. There's been a lot of back and forth on the recommendations for if you should eat fish versus omega-3 supplements, because fish, while high in omega-3s, also tends to be high in mercury or other pollutants and contaminants. And so often the recommendation will be, pregnant women should eat. At one point, they said three servings of fish times a week, and I think just recently they increased the serving again to 8 to 12 ounces of fish a week, which is considered 2 to 3 servings of fish per week. They say low-mercury fish, of course, but ultimately, that's a really hard recommendation to make. A couple of reasons. One, not everyone remembers what the high versus low-mercury fish are. Two, a very large percentage of the fish that we consume is mislabeled, like very, very high percentage. So you think you're eating a low mercury fish, but you might not be. And then three, like, you know, water, like we have a lot of pollution in our body, in our world and in our waterways. And especially depending on if it's farm raised versus fresh, freshwater raised, like there's going to be a different nutrient profile and a different pollutant profile. So personally, I do not eat fish, and for those reasons, primarily, and would not recommend eating fish when you're pregnant, because mercury is a big, huge brain toxin and accumulates. So like it hangs out for a while. It's not like you're going to eat a little mercury and then pee it out. Like, no, it's going to just hang out in your body. And like your baby's brain is like a lot smaller and a lot more susceptible than yours is. I've actually even seen the recommendation of not eating fish for 2 years before you become pregnant. Again, personal decision on how you feel on that. If that's something you want to think about, if that's something you want to do, I think it's worthy of considering, and worthy of being aware of, for sure, really focusing on low mercury fish if you are consuming fish, and then trying to decide, okay, do I want to do this during my first trimester, during my second trimester? Like, should I take a break from some fish, especially if I'm like trying to conceive or right there at the beginning? I would consider that, because you can get omega-3s from lots of other places. I get a really awesome vegan omega-3 oil. Well, it's an oil, and then like it's like a spray from this company called Ora, O-R-A. You can buy it at ora.organic. I've been using it for like 4 or 5 years now. Super love it. Tastes like orange. It's great. And then I also super load up with flax and chia seeds, which have the precursors to the omega-3 fatty acids that we need for our beautiful brains. So those are just two ways. And even if you did, even if you're like, I don't care about the like not eating fish things, Sam, you can get an omega-3 oil made from fish, but they purify out the mercury. So they make sure there's no mercury in it, which is pretty cool and really important. So my omega-3 oil is vegan. It comes from the algae, because it turns out fish aren't like magical omega-3 machines. It's just that they eat a lot of algae that has omega-3s, which I think is super cool and interesting. Mine is algae-based. You could get a fish-based one, and I would say recommend that tenfold over eating fish. Again, just because of the pollution and potential mislabeling. So it might sound like a little scare tactic-y, but seriously, like even when I ate all types of meat, if I had to choose like one that I would get rid of, like it would probably be fish first. Just because of that fact of like the regulation is so not there, and is so not there in the same way as it is for farm or land-based animals. So omega-3 is really important, but be aware of your sources. Vitamins. So probably you're taking a prenatal vitamin. Go you. Awesome. Ones to consider, look at, potentially supplement more with. Magnesium, calcium, iron, maybe even vitamin D. If you are vegetarian or vegan, B12. So why for some of these? Magnesium, super cool. I love magnesium. When I read about any kind of issue that someone has during pregnancy, whether it's like the nausea or it's leg cramps or like heart issues, it's always like take some magnesium, that will help. Magnesium appears to be the panacea for all pregnancy woes. And so I'm like, great, I'm a super supplement with it. Constipation is another one. So magnesium helps with everything. So I supplemented with magnesium already before becoming pregnant, and I would consider even upping your supplementation. Now, take a look at your prenatal vitamin. This is super fascinating, right? And I trust the people that make prenatal vitamins. I know that they're in the percentages that they are for a reason, but I know even in mine, which I researched extensively, you know, it doesn't have a lot of magnesium in it. It's not a ton, and I know I can use a little more. So I take magnesium on the regular. I think it is super helpful for that. There's also magnesium lotions, which can be amazing, especially if you are having leg cramps. So you can like massage it into your legs at night. I gave some to a prenatal client who was having a lot of leg cramps, and she was like, yes, that stuff works. So magnesium lotion, you can also soak in a bath with magnesium salts. So those are other ways, because you can really absorb magnesium from your skin or take the pills. So good. Iron, take a look at it. When you are pregnant, you increase your blood volume by a full liter, which I think is like either 33 to 50% more blood than you currently have in your body. Like, there's like a lot there. And because you're making all of this extra blood and fluid, you need a lot more iron to fill up all the little hemoglobins. So make sure you're getting enough iron. Again, I love getting tested. So just like get your levels tested. I know before I got pregnant, I've always kind of been like on the borderline of low. Like it'd be like, oh, you're fine, Sam. And I'm like, I don't know, like a little gust of wind away from being blown over onto the I'm low side. So that to me doesn't feel comfortable. I would rather be in the middle range. So I supplement also with a little extra iron, knowing that you really need it for childbirth and after. And during the pregnancy, like your need for it grows. And then for childbirth, you bleed a lot. So you really need to have some nice iron stores in there for helping you recover postpartum. So to me, it's worth it to like build some extra and then I'll have more of a buffer. Again, with all of this, I am not your medical doctor. Get these tests. They're very, very easy to get tested on where your vitamin levels are for certain things. So I've been like honing and working on these things for years, so I know what works best for my body. Calcium. This is an interesting one. This is newer to me. I heard from a midwife who said, and I saw a study on this that said that people that had enough calcium, women that had sufficient calcium, were way less likely to bleed and to have postpartum hemorrhage. So postpartum hemorrhage is if you bleed too much after you give birth. And they said that women who had sufficient calcium rather than too low of calcium, much less likely to bleed too much. Fascinating. Again, one of those, after I read that, I looked at my prenatal vitamin and I was like, 2% calcium, that's not really covering it, right? I know that they don't necessarily put it in the same capsule as iron because they can compete. So you want to get your iron in and then get your calcium in at a different time. So I just have a different calcium supplement that I'll take at night to make sure I get enough there. Obviously, go for your calcium-rich foods. That does not mean that you have to eat a shit ton of dairy. Could be from nuts and spinach and other greens. Like, there's calcium in a lot of foods. Again, I know I tend to run low on my vitamins, even when I eat lots of healthy foods. I don't know if it's like a Vata thing. I don't know what it is. But so I just take a little calcium supplement to make sure I'm covered, especially knowing that I don't eat any dairy. Magnesium, calcium, iron, vitamin D, always check it out. I mean, because basically it's like 60 to 70% of the population is deficient in vitamin D. This is another really important fat-based, hormonally related vitamin. So it's not worth being low on it, my friends, and really easy to supplement enough. So get your vitamin D, check out your levels, please get them tested. Again, and last one, B12. Just if you are someone like myself who does not eat any animal products, make sure you got yourself some B12. Again, important for brain, important for nerve function, and that's okay. And for everyone that's all worried, don't worry, my B12 is high. I had to like lower my dose of B12. I'm good. Thank you. cool. So vitamins, omega-3 fatty acids, fish, those are my thoughts. Let's talk about carbs. This is a really interesting one. For a really long time, let's make it sound really dramatic and call it the nutrition industrial complex. How about that? The nutrition industrial complex was like pregnant women need to eat a lot of carbs. There's a lot of fear around low carb eating, so it makes sense. And obviously, they don't like to do any testing on pregnant women. That's not a nice thing to do. So there's not really studies that talk about low carb. And there have been more recently been some people and nutritionists that are more paleo bent that are like low carb is okay for pregnant women. I would not recommend doing keto for a pregnant woman, personally. Just saying there. A paleo type approach that I would still consider moderate carb might feel good for you. What I've seen in my body is it needs carbs a little bit, like a little bit more than usual. And so I try to make them as healthy as possible, but there's been a little bit of an extra need for sugar in my body. So I'm eating more fruit than I used to. I'll usually have, you know, a slice of bread or a couple pretzels or something like that each day, which is different than what I used to ever do. I used to have bread like once every 2 to 3 weeks, and now I have a piece of it every day. It's really fascinating because I tried to go all healthy, which is how we usually do. So like, even though I ate pasta every day for the first 10 years of my life, maybe even 18 years of my life, Sean and I, my husband and I, we like never buy pasta. Like, it'll sit in our cupboards for like years. But every once in a while, we'll, you know, make up like vegan mac and cheese or an Alfredo or like a little tomatoey sauce, and we'll put it on the chickpea pasta. So Bonza or one of those other brands where it's like a pasta made out of chickpeas. We do this again every 3 months, every 4 months, not very often. But I was like, you know, I got a little hankering for some mac and cheese. Let's do this. So we put it on the chickpea pasta, and I was like, oh God, I don't know about this. I don't know if I like this, like today. Like this meal is not sitting well. We had some like leftovers of the cheese, but we didn't have enough of the chickpea pasta, so we put in regular pasta the next day. And the next day I was like, oh my God, this is so good. This is so much better. What I'm trying to tell you by this story is that my body can tell the difference between wheat-based carbs and carbs made out of other things. Like, so if you fed me pasta that's made out of chickpeas, my body will be like, mm-mm, nope, not satisfying. You better be feeding me a chip after this. But if you feed me pasta out of a real carb, my body's like, thank you, satisfied, good, done. There we are. So I've really found that particularly in my first trimester, like I had a need for some of these carbs. And sometimes it's just a matter of getting calories. Like if it's like you can't eat anything except for a piece of bread, like great, eat a piece of bread. I buy a loaf of Ezekiel, which is so crazy. I was looking at the side of it. The glycemic index is like 36 on Ezekiel bread. It's so good for you. And it's not going to super spike blood sugar, and it'll feel really satisfying and nice. So what am I saying here? I don't think carbs are the devil. I have seen reports that people that were experiencing a lot of heartburn felt better when they removed processed carbs. This is not licensed to go start eating a bunch of cookies, and especially I think like the combination of like sugar, carb, and fat. So like, I'm gonna be honest, I ate a little bit of a scone yesterday and I felt like crapola. And I think it's that combination of flour, sugar, fat coming together. So, you know, eating a piece of toast, great. Eating a croissant, maybe not as much. See the difference? So if it's simple carbs like that, I find that to be not super bad. And that's my recommendation. And something we're going to get into later, I'm going to start being a little more careful about the gluten and wheat in my diet as I get further on in my pregnancy, especially now that I'm done with the gestational diabetes test. Because I have seen reports that when you get closer to labor, it's better if you have less inflammation and less of maybe some of those glutens and wheats in your body. Something I saw. So I'm going to turn that down a little bit, but if it's the only thing your body can eat, you can eat some, go for it. And it's a great opportunity to like sneak in some vegetables. Like if like eating pasta makes you happy, like great, stir in some spinach, excuse me, especially if spinach usually doesn't work for you, like mix it with your carb, and hopefully that'll be okay. And really see with your body. The piece related to this is just think about how sensitive your body is right now, okay? Like, when I don't know, as soon as I have to pee, I really have to pee. As soon as I'm a little hungry, I'm really hungry. As soon as I'm thirsty, I am parched. As soon as I'm hot, I am sweating, right? Like everything's like a little like pronounced and intense, and there's like a lot of ups and downs I've found during pregnancy. And so it's really nice to respect that. And that means don't shove yourself with a lot of sugar. That means don't overdo it with foods you know don't make you feel good. You know, a little bit is better than a lot at this point. Let's talk about sneaky ways to get more veggies. Sneaky ways to get more veggies. Ooh, option one, Indian food. Like those super cooked, kind of like oily vegetables, at least in my body, felt really nice. So any kind of cuisine like that where stuff is really, really cooked and it's like kind of in a stew, I found vegetables tend to work pretty nicely. Juices and smoothies with vegetables, so great time to add celery and cucumbers and spinach and kale like to your smoothies that have a ton of fruit in them and like nut butter, and so it kind of masks that flavor. That works really nicely. Baked good with vegetables. I would make and do still make like a granola bar that has some carrots in it, or sweet potato brownies, anything like that. Basically just look at all those recipes for how to make your kids eat vegetables. And that's probably going to work on a pregnant lady too. So just trick them a little bit. And just kind of know what works and know what doesn't. Meaning you're going to learn, you know, like I learned pretty quick that I was like, that, you know, broccoli or Brussels sprouts or cauliflower, like it was going to be really rare. They had to be cooked in a very specific way for them to work for me. Whereas I have a little more leeway with some of my other vegetables. So there's a little trial and error, and that's okay. Which brings us all to the gestational diabetes test, which is so fascinating because I've learned so much about it over the last couple of years. Gestational diabetes. So it's not great for your baby if it happens. Again, you know, our little human bodies are meant to live in a very tight, well-organized system. And so when it gets pulled out of whack because of too high blood sugar or too low blood sugar, that's not great for it, particularly if you're a very sensitive little baby. So gestational diabetes is not fabulous for babies. So it's very important that we do this testing. And in many ways, I think it's very good that we screen everyone for gestational diabetes. I think there is some false positives or false diagnosis that happens because of the healthcare system that we have in our country. A lot of people are undiagnosed with diabetes, and so then they become pregnant, and then they take a gestational diabetes test at 24 weeks, and they're like, oh my God, you have diabetes, and you have gestational diabetes. And it's like, no, they just had diabetes, and we just didn't know about it. So I would love to see a study where they actually truly test people before they're pregnant or in their first trimester and see like who's pregnant or who has diabetes and who doesn't, and then goes on to see who develops gestational diabetes. So I really feel like that's missing because I don't necessarily think it's the case that every single person should be screened for gestational diabetes. It's like a personal one because pending more research needed. But as it is right now, everyone gets tested and that's okay. What you do is you drink this, like, it's basically like soda pop that's not carbonated, and it's 50 grams of straight glucose. They test your blood sugar after an hour, and they just want to make sure that it's gone down enough in that time. Very cool. Pretty exciting. Some doctors do allow you to do things differently. You can do it with a juice box, is something I see, or jelly beans. Problem with this is that the juice boxes and jelly beans aren't going to be as accurate. So you know, that glucose drink that they give you, it's been tested. It knows it is exactly 50 grams of glucose. It's a medical product, whereas Juicy Juice is not a medical product, and so it's not going to be as exact. And thus, you could have different results, potentially a positive, because, I don't know, your juice box had 56 grams of sugar in it, not 50, for example. So that's one reason why I kind of am thinking, okay, maybe it's actually just worth it to do the actual test that they give you. Another one that I've seen, I've never seen anyone actually be allowed to do this, but apparently it's possible to ask to be able to prick your finger and test your own blood glucose before and after meals for a couple days. Obviously, this requires a lot of trust between doctor and patient. For sure, there's a lot of work involved. I mean, it's acting as if you have diabetes. If you know anyone that has diabetes and is taking their blood sugar, like, it's doing that. So, it's a big ol' commitment, and you have to decide if you're into that. I was like, I'll do it. I have a couple cousins with diabetes. I'm like really used to it. Like I will stick myself. But my doctor wouldn't let me. I was really bummed, mostly because I just think it would be really cool to like see it and like see it in action over the course of a week. But alas, she said no, which is probably what most physicians are going to tell you. Maybe your midwife might be into you doing it a different way, but most physicians are going to say, no, you have to do this test the way it is. But here's another like super crazy, super interesting and important thing to know about the gestational diabetes test. They don't really tell you this because I don't know why. But it's actually, when you look at the instruction for the test, they do tell you to make sure you're eating at least 150 grams of carbs for 3 days before the test. So here's something that's interesting. A lot of women who, let's say they eat paleo or they eat lower carb or they just in general have a really healthy diet, they're like more likely to fail the test because they never eat 50 grams of sugar in a serving in one sitting, right? So their body is like, what is happening? And I think that's very, very, very fascinating. I think if I was going to say, okay, when do I eat 50 grams of sugar in one sitting? I can think of, oh my God, like, because I don't drink soda pop. You know, like none of that stuff is part of my life. I think the one thing that like us health conscious people might have going for us are like our really high calorie smoothies and juices. So like if you're someone that really loves to grab like a smoothie that has like some fruit in it and all that stuff, probably there's 50 to 60 grams of carbs in that. So that can work, but even still, it's different than a Pepsi because there's also fiber and maybe some fat in there and there's other nutrients involved. But in some ways, kind of eating more smoothies since I've gotten pregnant just in order to get more vegetables and fruits and just because that's something that my body's been craving, it's probably helped me in preparation for this. But that's all to say, if you're someone that doesn't eat a lot of carbs, please start eating more carbs for about the week, if not a little more, before the test so your body has learned how to handle them. So it's not like day of the test and like your body goes on a bender on this 50 grams of sugar. So check it out. And I just think that's really fascinating that it's not well shared, that your body needs to be used to processing that many amount of carbs. I did not end up trying to measure, but I did drink a little more juice and didn't limit my carbs for a few days before the test. We'll see how it goes. But so that's the first screen. There is a pretty high false positive rate. So if you get a positive, like, okay. And then you go in and you take a 3-hour version of the test where they like take your blood sugar before you eat anything. And then you drink the juice, whatever one it is. I think it's slightly more carbs than this one. And then they follow you over 3 hours to see. So it's really important things. You know, I had this moment, which I was like, why do I have to do this? I wish I didn't have to do this. And then it's like, you know, I see why we do, and that is okay. So really the next step is to then say, okay, how do I make sure that I do this test to the best of my ability and then really take care of myself afterwards? So like after I finish recording this, well, after I finish doing the test, so I, you know, the hour you have to like just sit there because if you exercise, that's going to clear more of the glucose from your body. But after that, I'm like, okay, I'm going to take a 30 to 40 minute walk and like get my body moving and start to get rid of some of that glucose and say I'm probably going to eat pretty nicely to myself for a couple days just to help it recover from all that glucose. So that's what I got on nutrition for you, my friends. It's hard, meaning that everyone is different. Those rules still apply. And what feels good in your body is going to feel different than what feels good in my body. So there is a lot of testing. There's a lot of seeing what works. There's a lot of non-attachment Because something that works really well for you one week might not work really well for you the next week, and that's okay. I've been going through so many phases in what I like to eat during my pregnancy. And take a look at your vitamins, at you know making sure you do what we recommend for everyone to do, which is eat a lot of whole foods, try to stay away from too many processed foods, and watch your portions to make sure you're not overstuffing yourself. And then you and baby will be good. So I hope this has been a helpful episode for you all. If you do have questions, comments, thoughts to share, please send me a note. Again, you can find me over at spirocollective.com and have such a wonderful day.